God,
God,
granted
grant
me the
me the serenity
serenity to
to accept
accept
the
the
things
things
I
I cannot
cannot change,
change, the
the
courage
courage to
to
change
change
the
the
things
things
I
I
can,
can,
and
and
the
the
wisdom
wisdom
to
to
know
know
the
the difference.
difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. On Zoom, you can raise your hand and someone will chat with you. Is anyone visiting from out of town or new to the meeting? Hey.
Stephen, I'm gonna call
Hey, Stephen. Oh.
I'm Jesse. I'm visiting from Savannah, Georgia.
Welcome. Welcome.
You have one of them.
Oh, hey.
Hey, I'm Jessica. I'm an alcoholic. This is my first time at the meeting.
Jessica.
Anyone else? Right. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. Forward to the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. For them, we hope these pages will prove so convincing that no further authentication will be necessary. We think this account of our experiences will help everyone to better understand the alcoholic. Many do not comprehend that the alcoholic is a very sick person, and besides, we are sure that our way of living has its advantages for all. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking A, simple actions. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. This evening, we are discussing steps 5, 6, and 7. Please welcome our panel this evening, Pete and Donald. I'll read the first page on page 72, and then the panel will share for a few minutes on each on the reading. Step 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Step 6, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Page 72, having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. We have admitted certain defects. We have ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We have put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. Now these are about to be cast out. This requires action on our part, which, when completed, will mean that we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our defects. This brings us to the fifth step in the program of recovery mentioned in the preceding chapter. This is perhaps difficult, especially discussing our defects with another person. We think we have done well enough in admitting these things to ourselves. There is doubt about that. In actual practice, we usually find a solitary self-appraisal insufficient. Many of us thought it necessary to go much further. We will be more reconciled to discussing ourselves with another person when we see good reasons why we should do so. The best reason first. If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep them to themselves certain facts about their lives. Trying to avoid this humbling experience, they've turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they got drunk. Having persevered with the rest of the program, they wondered why they fell. We think the reason is that they never completed their house cleaning. They took inventory all right, but hung on to some of the worst items in stock. They only thought they had lost their egoism and fear. They only thought they had humbled themselves. But they had not learned enough of humility, fearlessness, and honesty in the sense we find it necessary until they told someone else all their life story. Pete?
Good evening, everybody. My name's Pete and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey.
I'd like to thank Simple Actions for giving me the opportunity to come here and share my experience on steps 5, 6, and 7 with you guys tonight. And I got a lot of direction, you know, as to how to do this, not necessarily from the home group, but from another guy that I know. It's like, you're junior to me in sobriety. You're going to go first. Don't say anything that makes me look bad. But in the meantime, say things that make me look like I'm a good sponsor and I've taught you well. So I have a sponsor and he's sitting right next to me and he knows that he is. And that's why we're doing this, because this is, you always say yes when people ask you to do things in AA, especially if you have nothing better to do that night. And I did have something better to do tonight because my home group is tonight. My home group is the Indian River 12-Step Study Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, which meets in Uptown Kempsville in Virginia Beach. So making that small sacrifice to come over here tonight. Well, so downtown Kempsville is where New Day meets. So we got to make that distinction.
Whoa.
And I don't mind going first because my water bottle says, if you ain't first, you're last. So we're going to do that. And I didn't come prepared. I came with lip goo because it's that time of year. Came with gum because I knew Lygia was going to be here. And I came with water because I never know what I'm going to say. I didn't bring props. I didn't bring a printed out copy of the stuff highlighted and like bookmarks in my phone of all that stuff, because I got taught these steps pretty well by the sponsorship line that I've had. So my sobriety date is November 18th of 2007. So I just celebrated 18 years last month. But that doesn't mean that I've got 18 great years of sobriety. My job here tonight is to talk to you guys about 5, 6, and 7, you know, and I like to look at what it is the steps do and then why we do them, because I'm kind of one of those people that needs to understand the task at hand, but I got to know why I'm doing it. Because if I don't know the why, I'm probably not going to do it. I need to see the tangible results in front of me, which then says, all right, yeah, you too can do it. Is that good or is that bad? I think it's indifferent. It has not worked out well for me in life, but in AA, it's been working just fine because I see the results every day. I see everybody out here. And I appreciate the opportunity to come over to Norfolk in District 14, because had this been at the beach, I might have been wearing flip-flops, a T-shirt, and a pair of board shorts. Had it been Suffolk, they got rules out there about what you wear, tie and coat, you know, especially if you're maybe on a Friday night meeting out there. It's kind of a big deal. And then Norfolk, wear what your sponsor was probably going to wear. And I'm sorry that I overdressed, because I thought Donald was going to go with a nice pair of pants, maybe a polo and a jacket. So I kind of wore the same things, but it's all right. So step 5. What was step 5? Well, step 5 was when I stopped procrastinating doing my step 4. I had to sit with somebody and then read the really bad stuff that I wrote. And when I say really bad, it's like, that's really childish of you to have that resentment. That's ridiculous. Why do you think that way? Like, how can you as an adult have that going on in your life as you go through the progression of step 4? And the reason that I've got to do it with another human being is because I need to have my work critiqued by an expert. If I just sit there and read my own stuff, to me, it sounds like perfect prose. AI could not generate as good of stuff as I had probably written. Because I'm a perfectionist. It just happens that way. And that's why I procrastinate. But I needed that feedback. I needed to go through the columns. I needed to go person, resentment, the effect, to get somebody else to tell me what my character defect was. Because I didn't know the answers. I'd tried it all. I did not know what was the matter with me other than that there was something. And the reason of doing step 5 is so that I've got those character defects laid out in front of me, which will then lead to what I've got to do in 6 and 7. So the first time I did a really good step 5 was with my first sponsor, and we're sitting in his garage drinking coffee. He's smoking cigarettes, and it's the dead of summertime, so it's hot outside, and his garage was full of Harleys and other motorcycle related stuff, and it just smelled like cigarettes and oil. And he's looking at Maggie with his one good eye, because he only had one good eye. Steve only had, he had a fake eye, kind of like Sammy Davis Jr. And I thought there was supposed to be some miraculous experience that happened. Like, all of a sudden, all this weight is being lifted off of me. The burden of me is going away as I read this stuff to him. And he's sitting there drinking his coffee, looking at me and just nodding his head. It's like, what are you doing? You're supposed to be basically adoring me for what I'm saying and praising me for doing such a good job. And that's why I've got to do a step five, because what I'm supposed to gain out of that is the knowledge of my defects and the humility to humble myself in front of another human being and be open and honest with them. Because as the book says, if I don't do step five properly, four included along with that, I will probably go out and drink. But then I had the fortunate or unfortunate opportunity of switching sponsors in the meantime, and this guy made me start all the way over. So I had to redo. We had to read all over again. But I got a much better analysis of me from my current sponsor than I got from the first guy, because the first guy didn't really give me the feedback. He didn't help me identify the problem sets within my way of thinking and the way that I behaved and my impact on people. So when I did it with Donald, I was actually able to get the experience out of that that I was supposed to get. And he said, all right, well, that's that defect of character. And I'd argue with him for a little while, and then I'd just go read another one. But the only reason I argue with people is because I know they're right. I just need to prove that I'm righter than they are. Not only at that point, but still, you know, like in today's world, just not as
some
much.
Some things don't change.
Some things don't change. Some things will never change, Bruce Hornsby. They just don't. But I was able to write down a list of character defects. And every single time I read through the resentment, I was supposed to put a tick mark next to whatever character defect I had. And that clearly identified my pattern. I'm not a patient person. I'm not a kind person. I am not very humble. I am a lot of different things, but there were some things that stood out. And there were some behavior patterns that stood out. And there were light bulbs that went off when I did it with Donald that allowed me then to go back home and do the step six, the way the book says, to do it the right way. So what did I get out of step five? I got to see the real me. I got somebody else's feedback, because I cannot prove my own work. I am oblivious to understanding the impact I have on other people. I don't see it. I think it's either funny or it's just fine. It just goes that way, but it's not. None of it is good for most people. And I needed to have that laid out for me so that I could understand why I'm in the situation I'm in. Why am I doing Alcoholics Anonymous? Why am I a graduate of the Navy SART program? Why am I trying to go every day to a meeting to find out what the solution is? Why am I doing this? And there was a spark of humility that came from that experience. And I still have that same notebook. I use that notebook when I take people through the steps, because I need to revisit all that. That step five, it points out who I am, and it gives me the start on the humility that I need to do the rest of the steps. So when I get that done, you know, I'm thinking, like, I've heard people say, well, we burned it. You know, I just made an effigy out of it, forgot about it. There's no way I'm burning the work that I do. All right. Because I put a lot of time and effort into procrastinating over that. And then I'm supposed to go home and I'm supposed to quiet down, open the book to the page where the steps are and read through them and review them, making sure that I didn't leave anything out, that I put all the right ingredients into the mortar to make the cement, to make the foundation for what I'm doing. And that's hard. An hour. I speed through life. I think about things before I do them, so they take me less time. And at 15 minutes in, I'm bored already. But I've got to do this right, because by this time, life still sucks, you know, and nothing's been fixed other than I'm just not drinking. So I'm thinking about it. I'm thinking about step one. I'm thinking about step two. I'm thinking about that commitment I made in step three. And then I'm thinking about the inventory. And I'll tell you, doing step five with Donald got me to say some things that I had not told other people. Because he said, "Is that all you got? Sure, you got nothing else in there? I don't want you to leave here and go out and drink. Because when you go home, you're going to go do step six. Tell me some more." And he got me to be honest with him. Probably the one guy that I can do that with. Maybe some of the Steves in the back, but that's a different situation. But why do I do six? Why do I review those and then look at my character defects and make a decision? Why do I do all that? It's because I can't fix me. I can't fix me. I want to have all those defects of character removed. I do not want to be that same person that I was. Every day, there's something that goes horribly wrong. Why do I want to keep living like that? And I still, to this day, do not want to be that way, but they creep up. Every day, I've got to make the decision that I want to have God remove those defects of character from me. And I hear in the rooms all the time, man, you got to do a lot of work. You know, you got to go out there. You got to work on those character defects. Well, I was taught that realizing that I can't fix me and that God is the only one that can, what I'm doing is making a decision to have those defects of character removed as God sees fit. Because I will tell you that before I went in the program, and even after, me and the self-help section of Barnes and Nobles were pretty good ass friends. We just were, you know. I'm creeping in there, gotta go after dark. You don't want anybody to see you in there. Kind of like AA meetings in the beginning. You know, you're going in and you're scanning the parking lot, making sure nobody sees you. And I'm poking around the self-help book. Nothing that Oprah, Dr. Laura, any of those people were gonna tell me were working. It just didn't. But what did was when I took that decision of six and went to seven and humbly asked God to remove my defects. And that prayer that comes up, that prayer that you read, the prayer that I say every day to this day, because the first men's retreat I went to taught me that I should say that prayer every day, has been the reason why those character defects go away. They don't go away when I want them to go away. They go away when they're going to be of maximum benefit to God and to others inside of the program. So I'm not in control of that. But when I ask for something to be removed by God, how does God treat that? Laugh at the request? Probably giggling still to this day. But what God gives me are opportunities to exhibit the opposite of my character defects. God, take away, grant me patience, grant me kindness, grant me humility, grant me tolerance, grant me love, those kind of things. So I just don't get them. I don't naturally become those things. What I get are lots of what we call sets and reps. I get opportunities that set me up to be patient. I get opportunities that set me up to be kind. I get opportunities to do this because I need repetition. I went to a lot of meetings in the beginning. I got in the pattern of going to meetings. I need discipline. I need to form a new pattern of thinking and acting and speaking and all that kind of stuff. So I know that God gave me all those opportunities. And I ask every single day because that prayer is powerful. To have those defects of character removed. And are they gone every day? No. Did I work on them? Did I all of a sudden do all the work myself? No, because the true humility in all of that is the realization that without God's help, I am nothing. And that everything that I have become or gotten rid of or gotten new in the program is a result of God intervening in my life. Because that realization that if I did have that power, I probably would have been able to fix those things on my own ahead of time. And when I do five, six, seven, and that's kind of part of the day, I realize in the beginning that I've got a lot of problems. I can't fix them. I know God can. I'm going to ask God to. And then when it comes to the defects of character, saying that seventh step prayer on a daily basis is part of my routine. And I have to do it. And I have to do it early. Got to do it in the morning because we all got to, well, not all of us, but some of us have to get in our cars and drive to work, right? You need patience, you need kindness, you need tolerance, and you probably need love of your fellow man when you get on the road in the morning. That's just before I get to work, all right? And then I got to deal with all that. I need the opposite of my character defects every day. And I know what they are. I know who has the power to give them to me. And I know how to ask that power on a daily basis. Because five, six, and seven are kind of half of the program. That four through nine, which is step 10, that's the basis of the program. It's when I'm getting bad, when things aren't going well, when I'm developing resentments, I'm doing a daily inventory. Have I committed an offense against anybody? Have I put them in a position where I put them at a disadvantage and I've shown my character defects? Have I talked to somebody about it? Do I need to identify what that problem set is? Do I want to be that way? Do I know what that is? Do I know who has the power to take that away? Did I commit an offense against you? Did I need to make an amends? What we're talking about tonight is half of that. So I really like it when I hear people talk about having to do as much of the 12 steps on a daily basis as possible, because that is the key to the program for me. It's not just living in the solution. I live in the 10, 11, 12 world. And we hear that a lot, and there's nothing the matter with it. But if you didn't start out with one, two, and three to get you to the point where you're effective at 10, 11, and 12, then maybe we're just kind of doing the first and the last steps without doing the middle part. And I cannot afford to not do the middle part. So I know what my problems are. I still have them. The good news is that the frequency and the amplitude of those problems are both less than they ever used to be, but they flare up. They do. But I have a program to know what to do with those things right now. And that is very essential to what I do. So with that, I just want to say I understand the steps. I understand the purpose of those kind of things. And that's kind of why we have sponsorship. Somebody had to teach me those things. I can't read that book because my reading comprehension sucks and I'm going to fall asleep on the third page. But I need a translator. I need a tutor. I can't go fix myself. I need the God and the human, and then God acting through everybody else interaction on a daily basis. So I'm getting that tonight. And I really appreciate the opportunity with you guys to take a look at those kind of steps and see the impact that they're making on my life. So I appreciate that. And I will pass this over to the main event. Donald DJ Smith. Donald.
Donald Smith, alcoholic. My sobriety date is October 17th, 1994, and I my home group's the West Kent Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, where we have a meeting at 8 o'clock every Wednesday night. We're going to meet on Christmas Eve, so if you need a meeting and want to come to us, come see us, please do. Now, I printed this stuff out because I think it's important.
Shoes. Is it you?
It seems like it.
You got to stop. That's all they're going to hear on the fence.
How's that?
Just cool your heels.
My heels are cooled.
Sorry.
Oh, yeah. I'd like to know what the format of the meeting is so I don't go too far into the readings. And also because I knew Pete was going to be talking, and I would have to remember some things that since he'd get me thinking about other stuff. Anyway, the first part of this reading, I made a couple little notes. And the thing, I should wear another pair of shoes next time.
If Pete didn't mess you up for the rest of the night, being barefoot isn't going to mess you up for the rest of the night.
I'm not taking my shoes off. I'm sorry. Let's see. It says, the first part that we read says, having made a personal inventory, what shall we do about it? And the question always comes up that once I do this inventory, is it something I can live with? Is it actually something that once I know who I am, I have sat down and looked at it, is it something that I can really live with? And in most cases, in all cases that I know of, the answer is no. I can't live with that by myself. This is stuff that I don't even want to, you know, how do you want to talk about to myself, much less to someone else? I didn't want to do the inventory. I don't want to talk to anybody else about it. But I'm trying to get a new attitude and a new relationship with my creator. And in my case, it was just a new attitude and a new relationship because I didn't have a creator. I was an atheist when I got here. And I want to discover the obstacles that are standing in my path, obstacles that are not something, you know, things that are blocking me from the sunlight of the spirit, as you see if you read it in the fourth step. And so the other thing I want to point out is it says that we put our finger on the weak items in the inventory. Now these are about to be cast out. That doesn't mean I'm going to take care of them myself. It doesn't mean I'm going to work on them. It means I'm going to ask God to remove them. And I got to remember that because I always hear a lot. I don't hear a lot, but I hear sometimes people say, I'm working on my defects of character. And you can't work on your defects of character. They work on you. It's the other way around. What I have to do is be aware of them so I can ask God to remove them. God wants me to know what's going on in my life. I was at a meeting Saturday night, and I had this question that always comes up when I first got sober. If self-knowledge for an alcoholic is of no avail, self-knowledge can't keep you sober, why the hell do I do all this inventory? What's the point of all that? You know? And the answer is I have to know who I am. I have to know, God wants me to know who I am and that I have to ask specifically for what needs to be removed. And that means I got to know me. And to me, that's a really important thing to know. And it's humbling because I can't do anything about it. But it's also empowering because I know what I need to do because of it. Then it says, I'm going to spend too much time because I want to do a lot more on 6 and 7 when we get there. But I do like the thing that says we skipped a vital step because if we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. And I like to remind myself that it's not overcoming drinking, it's more overcoming alcoholism. That as I get further and further down into my sober life, I'm not drinking anymore, but I certainly am practicing alcoholic tendencies. I have untreated alcoholism at times. And if I don't take this step, if I don't do the inventory and then speak to somebody about it, I get in trouble. I'll never forget, I had a sponsor over in Portsmouth, and he used to tell me on the phone all the time. He'd say, you got an inventory? I said, well, yeah. Have you read to anybody? He said to anybody? Well, no. He goes, you should come over. He said, in AA, we do all the steps, not just the ones we don't want to do. And I didn't want to do it. I just assumed all I had to do was write inventory, and I knew what I was going to do, and I knew what was happening. This is when I was doing my 11th step inventory at night. And I'd say, well, I don't have to talk to anybody about it. I already know what it is. And in most cases, that's true. But sometimes something comes up and it's for nanny and I need to talk to somebody. And I'm confused about it, particularly if it keeps coming up. So just remember, for me, I had to just remember that communication is not something alcoholics like to do. It's just something I don't like doing it. And I never have liked doing it. I don't feel like I'm making connections with people. So the other thing is I want to say real quick is that, you know, for me, I kind of look at the fifth step like this. You know, when I have all these organs in my body that take in nourishment and expel waste. All of my organs do that. The only organ that doesn't expel waste is your brain. You bring in all this stuff, the good stuff and the bad stuff, and just sits in there and doesn't go anywhere, right? So by writing inventory and then speaking it to somebody, that helps expel it. And that is a truism that he found in psychology and in the church. I mean, that's why they do confession. That's why you go and talk to your minister about things. So it is a spiritual thing and it is a mental thing. And it's a very important thing to do in Alcoholics Anonymous. And then finally, it says, we've only lost our egotism and fear. I just love the fact that I always think I'm humble. I always think I've lost my fear. I always want to think I'm on the best road that I can be. And the truth is, that's never the truth. You know, the truth is that I can always do better. I need to be a little more humble. I need to be more fearless. I need to be more honest. And then the last thing is, until they told anyone their life story. Normally when I'm sponsoring someone, we'll read all of this. And then we'll get to that line. And I tell them that we're to make an appointment for them to come back and do their inventory. But they are also to go home and write down anything that they are taking to the grave with them. They are not going to tell anybody. And I need you to write that down and bring it back to me. So when we do the fifth step together, you'll read that to me. Because there's no place in the book where it says that all these secrets that we're supposed to have, and we have, there's no place except here that I can ask them to bring that stuff to me. Because if it hasn't come up in the resentment inventory or the fear inventory or the sex inventory, then it needs to come up there. So I always make sure I sell that to people before we do that. And that's all for step five. Step five is like critical, but it's kind of basic, you know. You do it, you go sit down, you do it. So anyway, thanks.
Thank you both. Continuing on page 73.
Not yet.
More than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. He is very much the actor. To the outer world, he presents his stage character. This is the one he likes his fellows to see. He wants to enjoy a certain reputation, but knows in his heart he doesn't deserve it. The inconsistency is made worse by the things he does on his sprees. Coming to his senses, he is revolted at certain episodes he vaguely remembers. These memories are a nightmare. He trembles to think that someone might have observed him. As fast as he can, he pushes these memories far inside himself. He hopes they will never see the light of day. He is under constant fear and tension that makes for more drinking.
Since I didn't follow directions really well in the first place, and I kind of shared on some of those things, I'll just touch briefly on that before I pass it on to Donald. Leading a double life, a stage character? Are you kidding me? How many personalities do you need me to have? Because I can be whatever needs to be at that point in time. I was talking to people just last week about this work personality that I have. I definitely have a work personality. It's very goal-oriented. It's very driven. It's very hard to maintain outside of the workplace. So thank God it doesn't happen. Because it would really suck. But it comes from a long history of living in an environment where I've got to be a certain way and be a high achiever. But I go back to my alcoholism, and I was multiple different people. I was people in the family. I was people with the original family. I was people with work. I was people with whatever. And just having to be what I thought you needed to see me as got really, really hard. I envy all of the people that can be themselves all of the time and you don't change. I don't know how you do it. I don't have that capacity. I live inside of the world where I've got to be whatever I think you want me to be. The good part is the steps stop me from having to be that. And I can just be the normal person, because the normal person is very introverted. The normal person is very shy. The normal person doesn't want to make decisions. I just wish you did all that. But the alcoholic me, when that takes over, that's a completely different person. And getting rid of that need and desire and requirement in my life as a result of doing the steps makes life a whole lot easier to live in. And with that, I'll pass.
Yeah, I don't have much else to add to that, except I don't have a work. I'm not working anymore. Oops. I'm sorry. I don't have to work anymore. So I don't have a work character. But I don't know of a single alcoholic that I know of that can't relate to this. I know when I was working, when I was drinking, I had a certain way I had to be with people. And it was not who I actually was. Plus, when I was running around doing all the other stuff I was doing while I was drinking, that was a certain role I wanted you to see me as. And I did that, but it really wasn't who I was. But the truth of the matter is that I didn't know who I was. So I became all these things I made up in my head so that I could project that to you and be okay. All right. So that was but in my double life meant that I was at home a lot of times, waking up in the morning going, what the hell am I doing? Why did I do that? Why did I do this? Questioning what I was doing and all that stuff. And the fact of the matter is that I didn't like doing it if I went back and looked at it. But I was so bought into what I was, to who I was, where I was going. I was going to go there and I didn't care. So it was my stage character, you know, and a lot of folks, even today, I think it's more important for me today to realize that I can also develop a stage character in my life when I'm walking around sober, going to AA meetings, acting like something that I'm not, you know, and in the back of my mind, I got a certain reputation I want to have, you know. I mean, it's really hard, I think, for people. You may not relate to this or not, but after you get around here for a while, it's hard to tell somebody that you've been around for a long time that you're having a hard time. They don't want to hear it. They don't believe it. And so you have to almost put up a front with people, unless you have some really close friends and you have a sponsor you can talk to, and then you can bring that stuff back together. And then it says highlighted the inconsistencies are made worse by the things he does on sprees. You know, a spree is not just drinking. For me, a spree is going out and doing crazy stuff. And when I'm totally sober, I'm off on a spree. I'm doing, you know, even driving down the street, yelling at people because they're going too slow is a spree. I'm kind of going back, I'm backtracking into my old way of thinking and my old way of acting. And I don't want people to see me being rude to people, but I do it all the time. It's horrible. But at least it doesn't happen as often, but I just want to say that sometimes it's difficult when we're in AA that we want people to think that we're sober and doing stuff and we're not really doing that stuff. But we look good. We talk good when we're in the meetings, but what happens, what's going on when you walk out the door? That's a stage character in the meetings in terms of being out. So this stuff is important because it allows me to, for the first time in my life, what I'm doing is I'm looking at myself objectively. Normally what I'm doing is I'm just kind of living. My attitude is, you know, I'm reacting. I'm just doing what I'm going to do. And I'm not thinking about it. But what happens in Alcoholics Anonymous is I learn how to step back and look at myself and see what it is that I'm doing. I think that's really important. That's what the fourth step did for me, and that's what doing the 11th step does. It gives me, works that into my brain that I need to be aware of who I am as a human being. And I'll stop right there.
All right, and I'm going to combine the next two on page 75. When we decide who is to hear our story, we waste no time. We have a written inventory, and we are prepared for a long talk. We explain to our partner what we are about to do and why we have to do it. He should realize that we are engaged upon a life and death errand. Most people approached in this way will be glad to help. They will be honored by our confidence. We pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. Returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we have done. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know him better. Taking this book down from our shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps. Carefully reading the first 5 proposals, we ask if we have omitted anything, for we are building an arch through which we shall walk a free man at last. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on the cement put into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? If we can answer to our satisfaction, we then look at step 6. We've emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? Can he now take them all, every one? If we still cling to something we will not let go, we ask God to help us to be willing.
So the part of all that sticks out the most to me is about the fear. Because I walk around afraid of a lot of things, afraid of doing the wrong thing, afraid of what you're thinking, afraid of not living up to the expectations, you know, when I'm out there. And that's hard. That's a really hard life. But I'll tell you that fears don't go away. When I became sober, they just kind of tamped down a little bit. It's just crazy lights, probably rats chewing on wires back there. It's fine. Could be, or it's just cold out. But fears, I remember reading the inventory and it getting easier, very fearful of what I'm going to tell you and what you're going to say back. But when nobody's saying anything back, when you're reading it, all right, this is easy. It's just easy. I'm just going to tell you. Because what I got out of doing that, once the fear was going away, was the owning of my stuff. And that, I think, is the part that makes me more of the adult in my sobriety than I ever was able to do, is that I own the things that I do. It is easy to say, yep, I did that. That's me. There's no denying anymore. It's like, all right, the good, the bad, the ugly, that's me. I did that. That is easier to say. Not doing that is one of those characteristic traits that every alcoholic really has, the blame game. Tried to stop playing the blame game as much as possible. And whenever it is my fault, it's my fault. It's like whatever I did, I will own up to and admit that. There's no smoke and mirrors anymore. It's like, I didn't say that. That's not true. All those kind of things. It's just not there anymore. So I think that losing the fears about speaking to other people about the past behaviors is a great part of the step. And for me, it's the owning everything that I do that gets me into the middle of that recovery piece that, yep, I did that. That's me. And I take responsibility for that. So I will pass that to Donald.
All right. I'm not going to go too much into the first part of the reading. It's pretty self-explanatory. You do what it says to do and you listen. Then you go home. And the most important thing about doing this step, I think, is going home. And I'm going to, you know, I tell folks to when they're done with the reading, not the most important thing, but one of them, you got to go home and sit down and evaluate and look back at what you've done. And it says, take an hour to go home. And, you know, and so it says this other stuff and you kind of like, what the hell does this mean? You know, are the stones properly in place? The stones are what? The cornerstone, which is step 2, and the keynote and the keystone, which is step 3. So I'm going back and looking, have I properly done step 3? Do I understand what that means? Do I have a power greater than myself that I can work with, that I really have a relationship with, I'm working to get a relationship with? And then it says, have I, in the foundation, have I tried to make mortar with sand? I always think, you know, that sand and mortar require water, you know, you got to make water. And then, so do I have too much drinking stories in my inventory? I mean, in my life, am I thinking too much about drinking, or am I putting more solid stuff in it to firm it up so I know what I'm doing? I know that alcohol is a problem for me and that I'm an alcoholic and what all that means. So it takes a while to go through that. It takes about an hour. And then what happens? If I can answer these questions to myself, is my work solid? Is the cornerstone in place? Is the keystone in place? Is the foundation to my sobriety, is that in place? Is all that stuff ready? If I can say yes, I go and I do, I look at step six. There's a lot in this step, and I think that it gets, you know, I'm not one, let me put it to you like this. There's a book going around called Drop the Rock. And I tried to read that thing, and it was a horrible thing. I couldn't read it. It had too much stuff in it that had nothing to do with step six. And for me, step six is about being ready at all times, every day, that when I do something, when my defects of character show up, that I'm willing, I'm ready to ask God to remove it. I haven't asked him yet, but am I willing to do it? And that's all that it is. It's an attitude that I take towards my life and toward my relationship with God that I do on a daily basis. That's what that, it's all that it is, but it's the most important thing I do. It is better, I think, to me, if I get in trouble in any time in my life, it's because I'm not doing step six properly. I'm not willing to look at myself and have God remove defects of character. It's not step three. I'm not doing a step three. It is step six for me. So it's really important I get up every morning and I ask God that I am entirely ready to have God remove any defects of character that stand up in my way. It's my attitude towards myself and towards God and the people around me. And it's simple, but it's difficult sometimes because it just is what it is. I'm a human being. I would just say that. I want to back up one quick minute and say this too, before we get out of here. I want to talk something about seven too. So shit, I'll wait. Never mind. Go ahead.
On page 76, when ready, we say something like this. My creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. We have then completed step seven.
Pete Alcoholic, I can vouch for him reading that book because he and I read it, and I will tell us that it probably took us over a year to do it. We may have taken a little hiatus or a sabbatical in the middle of reading it for a lot of different reasons. But that prayer, I don't think that prayer gets as much press, as use. It's not worshiped as much as the third step prayer is. I don't know, depending upon what your sponsorship tree looks like, male, female wise, there's some rituals out there that people get on their knees, kneel on the hardest thing they can possibly find, stones if you got them, and then say the third step prayer, holding hands as slowly as possible to feel the pain, to trust God to do that. It's common practice out at the ocean front if you're not aware. But what I'm saying about that is, I think that step of that prayer is just as important as the third step prayer, because they're almost word for word a lot like each other. It's, I am trusting God. I am turning my will over to God in step three. And part of turning my will over to God is doing the rest of the steps. And in seven, asking him to remove those defects of character. The wording is very similar. I say those two prayers, along with a bunch of other things, every morning to get me situated right. There are other times during the day I say those as well, because I need all that stuff. we've got a weekly ritual at home that we have to do. And during that time frame of this very painful experience, I'm actually saying those prayers while I'm helping my wife do this task that we have. And they get me through this thing because it's related to things that make me want to pass out if those things were happening to me. So these prayers and saying them and repeating them and making them part of my life, that seventh step prayer is as important as the serenity prayer and the third step prayer. And it really means a lot to me. So it will always be part of what I do. And I love that prayer probably more than step three. Because I do want to change. I want to change and I want to get better.
I will say this as quickly as I can. It says the great thing about doing this, about doing step seven, is that I'm at the point in my life where I'm beginning to let not just ask God to remove my defects of character, but I have to understand who I am. And I think this is where God provides me with forgiveness. And I'm able to live the life that I am and with all of my defects of character. Because it says that God will remove from me all the defects of character which stand in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. So it may be that one of my bad defects of character is useful for God's sake, not for mine. And I may not like it, but I may have to keep it. And if that's the case, then I have to learn to love who I am. I'm a child of God. God made who I am and all the stuff that goes with it, good and bad. So I'm giving that to God because I know who I am. And I know also I can't do anything about any of this stuff. I'm asking God to do it, not me. I'm awake to it. I'm trying to work my life through it, but this is it. This is who I am. And there's a lot of freedom here. There's a lot of freedom in here. And it's important to me. This is like one of the, I can't make a lot of jokes about this because it's that important to me. This part of my program is like the centerpiece of what I do every day. And it's important. And it says, grant me the strength. So I'm asking God, I can't do any of this again. I'm powerless over myself and alcoholism. I just am. So I'm asking God to grant me strength as I go out to do God's bidding, not my own. I'm asking for strength. That's power. That's an important thing to do. Because the step 11 says, I sought through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact with God and to the power to carry out his will. So in this, if I do this prayer, I'm automatically doing step 11, part of step 11 in that prayer. So it says every single defect of character, good and bad. And I can't tell you how much when I got really to understand what this was about, how I became to understand who I was and that who I am is just great. It's fine. It's who I'm supposed to be. And I have good parts and bad parts. You know, I used to say all the time, if you consider me in the context of my limitations, I'm perfect. Right. But I only looked at the perfect part. I never looked at the context part. I was always a perfect, not a context. Today, I'm a little bit of both. I'm more context than I am perfect. But it's important to remember. Real quick, by the first time I did this, I did not go through the big book. Someone gave me a Hazleton or some such crap. I don't know what it was. But I had to do all this stuff. And I go, but he had me go home. And I did the hour. And I sat down. I did the hour. And I got done with it, and I was sitting around my apartment with my girlfriend at the time. And out of nowhere, I mean, 2 or 3 hours after I'd done this, I got a phone call from a woman in Missouri that I used to live with for 3 or 4 years. And I hadn't talked to her in 3 or 4 years. And I was like, holy crap. So I made my amends, talked to her a little bit, hung up the phone, never talked to her or saw her again. An hour and a half later, I got another phone call. It was another girlfriend from Missouri that I had done the same thing. I had been rude and mean. And I said, oh, God, I made my amends. We talked a little bit, hung up the phone, never talked to her or saw her again. That's a God thing, as you know. I mean, and that, and I just, you know, this is powerful stuff that we do. It saves people's lives. It saved my life. And if I can help anybody, or you got any, I mean, it's just, it's that important. And we communicate this to people as best we can. And one other quick thing, it says on page 72, the 12 and 12, that character flaws made me a problem drinker. And I'm going to tell you right now, that's not what made me a problem drinker. So I'll leave the 12 and 12 to itself. Thank you.
Thank you both. That's great. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the Seven Tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influence that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our group endeavors to provide a safe place, meeting place for all attendees, and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. Are there any AA-related announcements?
Hey, my name's Lydia. I'm an alcoholic. Hey, this day, Joys of Recovery will be meeting, and you're all welcome to come. 8 o'clock and test 3,000.
Thank you.
Thank you.
As a reminder, West Ghent is meeting on Christmas Eve at 8 o'clock. Prince Anne Road, block and a half down off of Hampton Boulevard, 8 o'clock. Come see us if you'd like for Christmas Eve if you need a meeting. Thanks, Mike.
Hey, everybody, I'm an alcoholic named David.
David.
This group has a couple of events coming up in February, which we're not going to announce right now. But I'll tell you that there's some blue and yellow flyers over there on the table. We would really appreciate it if you would take some back to your groups and help us get the word out. Please pick up the flyers on your way out. You can put them in people's stockings if you want.
Stop.
Okay, I'll stop.
Great watching. Idea.
Thank you.
All right. Any other announcements? Okay. If you are interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Literature is available, and please see me or any home group member after the meeting. Sponsorship is yours, and AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to me or email info@simpleactions.net. Smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website. All are invited and encouraged to join us for fellowship at the meeting after the meeting that will be held at Cafe Stella, which is right down the street. Thank you. Let's say thank you to our panelists. Thank you.
Yes, we have. All that will win.
After the Lord's Prayer, everyone will have a chance to say thank you to both of them back here. And David has volunteered to read the last two paragraphs on page 164.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right. Great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you. That was a great way of closing.
It is great.
Do it around the back here.
Yep.
All right.
It's crazy.
That's fine.
Not as cold as I felt earlier.
Sorry, after a moment's silence, for those still sick and suffering, we'll close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Amen.